Well, good morning and welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. If you're in many parts of the country today, including the Washington area, you know it is snowing outside. We're having one of those rare March. They're billing it as a blizzard, but from here in the northwest section of D.C., I can actually see the National Cathedral from our studio. And we have maybe an inch on the ground. The streets are clear. The sidewalks are clear. But the worst is yet to come. So if you're home and enjoy yourself, don't get out if you don't have to. The commute this morning was a treat thanks to the fact that the government was closed, banks are closed, and the schools are shut down. So it's a win-win for all of us. Interesting show today. We have Carol Bonacero, president for the Senior Executives Association, and she's going to be talking about what senior executives do, who they are, where they are, how they're handling sequestration, and that sort of thing. And then we'll move on and talk with Stephen Losey, senior writer for the Federal Times, and more on sequestration, the retirement surge that's happening, and the various threats to federal workers' pay and benefits. So should be a good show, and tell your friends and warm up, snuggle up to the radio and listen to us. Carol, are you with us?
Absolutely.
Thank you for being on today. Our timing was perfect in this, huh?
Absolutely, and thank God for telecommuting.
Absolutely, yeah. That Yahoo notwithstanding. hey, Carol, I want to ask you some kind of basic questions. And I always try to note this when I'm talking about the SEA. You have a banquet every year at the State Department, and the idea is to recognize career executives who've been honored or given awards by the White House for outstanding work. And anybody going to it would be impressed. I've been to many, if not most of them, and every time I go, I'm blown away by the talent and the accomplishments of the people who were given awards. It never ceases to amaze me. And also the backup they get from their political bosses. Oftentimes a cabinet secretary or an agency head will come with the winner, and it's an inspiring evening. I wish you could film it and show it in a documentary for the American people. Would you explain what the senior executive service is and what kinds of jobs SES members have or hold?
Absolutely. Well, the senior executive service is an entirely separate personnel system, totally unlike the general schedule, where most of the civil servants in the federal government, their positions are found. And so they operate under a very different personnel system, which the theory was, at least when it started, that it would be a balance of risk and reward. And, of course, we can talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the positions, everything from, let's say, a deputy CHICO, chief human capital officer, director of shipbuilding for the Navy, director of the IRS small business and self-employed division, a department ethics officer, they fill a great many types of positions.
Well, it reminds me of the military in that people have this incredible responsibility in money and in terms of people at sometimes some fairly young ages.
Yeah, interestingly enough, you know, we try and look at the average age, and I think it's somewhere around 54. But on the other hand, we're seeing, I think, more people coming into the SES at a younger age, which actually it raises some interesting questions, namely, you know, are there a large number of talented, able, experienced GS-15s who have said, you know, I'm not interested, which is a great worry of ours.
You know, you mentioned that once, and if you don't mind, the story, as I recall it, was an SESer and his wife or her husband, and one was a GS and one was an SES, and the conversation they had going out the door?
Yeah, it was a Saturday morning, and they're having coffee, and one is dressed and going to work, and the other is looking forward to Saturday at home, and says to the senior executive leaving for work, is that extra $1,500 a year really worth it? And that's a good part of the problem, you know. As best we can tell, GS-15s, for example, a lot of them, look at these positions with the enormous responsibility they carry, the career political interface, which can be difficult at times, being on call 24/7, and the possibility of being reassigned geographically, which may not happen that often, but is worrisome for a lot of them. And then they say, and by the way, what will be the compensation for this? And it just is not enough to get them to overcome those detractors.
Well, I would think, particularly in times like this, where people have cell phones and social media and all that sort of thing, and Twitter and tweeting, that some people are literally working around the clock.
Well, yeah, you know, I blame that on BlackBerry,
yeah.
Which made these folks really available. And I know that I recall one senior executive who said, you know, his boss expected him to really have that BlackBerry at his side at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm. I've been told that by a number of people, that it doesn't matter when the call or the message comes in, you are expected to respond in 15 minutes. The SES was originally set up back in the day by the Carter administration as part of civil service reform, and I know before that time there were GS-16s, 17s, and 18s. They called them super graders, and the idea was, once Congress passed this and created the SES, people in GS-16, 17, and 18 were told, in effect, you can switch. We expect you to switch over to the SES, and you don't have to, but if you don't, you're dead in the water. You're never going to make any moves in government. So most people switched over, and the idea was, as you said, to sort of separate it, make it different. But some people complained that the mobility part of it hasn't happened.
Well, you know, yes, the mobility part is in the law, but if you look back at what then Civil Service Commission head Scotty Campbell said, and others at the time, the real motivation was that if you were running a department or agency, you couldn't move those super graders around to where you felt they were most needed because of their job classification. So in large part, what the Carter administration saw as the real immediate benefit was being able to move them within departments and agencies. And that has been done. Sometimes it hasn't. And when you really press political pointies and say, look, you know, everyone keeps talking about mobility and, gee, it doesn't happen that much, but you have the total capability to do it, why don't you? And what you often hear is, but you know they're doing such a great job where they are, and I don't really want to move them. So it's a bit of a thorny issue.
Yeah, and I think places like the IRS and the justice agencies, the law enforcement agencies, do move people around quite a bit on purpose.
Yeah, and that's been a tradition, so that when people come in, they know that the way up is around, so to speak, you know, going through a number of jobs, being moved around the country.
So how do people get into the SES? You mentioned that a lot of GS-15s look at the responsibilities and the pay differential and say it's not worth it. But how does somebody get into the SES, and what's the mix within the senior executive service between career employees and political appointees?
Well, let's start with that. By law, government-wide, 10% can be non-career senior executives. 90% have to be career. And that's of the allocated positions, not necessarily the filled ones. But in any event, the way you get in, there are a couple of ways, but the bottom line is that ultimately your resume, your qualifications have to be viewed and vetted by a qualifications review board. And that's to ensure that, indeed, these people are qualified, meet the executive core qualifications, and that the merit systems, the merit principles are applying.
Well, you know, presumably most SES members put in a lot of long hours, you know, working alongside their politicals to develop the sequestration and the furlough plans for the agencies. And now that sequestration is here, furloughs are presumably about to come. Could you walk us through a typical day for an SESer?
Oh, my gosh. I don't think there is a typical day, but right now I think an awful lot of them are indeed still looking at those furlough plans. And, of course, as you know, the unions have the ability to have some involvement in negotiation around those plans. And I think that, for example, one of the issues they have to struggle with is, you know, ideally you want to give the employees as much flexibility as you can with regard to those furlough days. On the other hand, you're still responsible of keeping the agency going and meeting your responsibilities. And I think that's the tough part right now. No matter what kind of job they're in, they are trying to manage intelligently and effectively through a process that is just mind-boggling.
We've never done it before. Yeah, Carol, hold that thought, if you will. We need to take a short break here. We'll be right back on Federal News Radio.
For those of you who like to check your connection speed, you can go to broadbandreports.com. You can get their speed test. You can test your upload and download speed. I like to do that periodically. Sometimes my Fios download speed gets up to 16 megabits per second, but this morning I had 10 down and 3 up. And you've got 60 megabits per second. I'd love to have that kind of bandwidth, but 60 could be overkill. But I'd say anything more than 30 is probably not worth the money.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
Agency of the Month, Department of Homeland Security, sponsored by Ardent MC, a HubZone contractor.
Rich Serino, the deputy administrator of FEMA, talks about deploying a new kind of emergency response team to the scene of Superstorm Sandy.
With these innovation teams, they were able to operate and look at some problems that we had identified, some that they saw, and then find creative solutions to real-world problems in real time.
Agency of the Month, Thursdays at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. I'm Gillian Brockell.
From the tropical island of Maui to the top of Capitol Hill, Ardent MC, a HubZone contractor, solves difficult problems. Since 2003, Ardent MC has delivered the Department of Homeland Security's Common Operational Picture, which allows information to move throughout the agency when supporting state, local, and federal emergency response. Ardent MC utilizes its HubZone certification to promote technology and employment in underutilized areas, like their Maui Software Development Center. Ardent MC is known for taking the chaos out of complexity. Visit ardentmc.com to learn more.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
It's now easier for people with disabilities to be hired by the federal government. They will no longer have to provide a certification of job readiness when applying for a position. That certificate required applicants to submit a written assessment from a medical professional stating that they could perform the duties of a specific job. The form was seen by many as an unneeded barrier to entry. President Obama wants to see agencies hire 100,000 people with disabilities by 2015.
When did you last review your life insurance coverage? WEPA, a nonprofit association, enables federal employees to purchase better life insurance at far better prices. As a superior alternative or supplement to FEGLI, WEPA provides more coverage, more benefits, and greater flexibility, yet costs much less. Visit WAEPA.org to learn more about WEPA and its premium refund program that has returned over $65 million to its policyholders since 1996. Once again, that's WAEPA.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-Al-Anon.
Really, one website to find all government and military events happening in our area?
I know. With GovEvents.com, it's so easy to find government and military-related events happening near me and around the world. I can search by keyword, date, location, live event versus webcast, and so much more. And best of all, it's completely free.
I can't believe I haven't heard of this site before. What is it again?
It's govevents.com, the best place to find government events that matter to you, near you.
Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey. I'm talking with Carol Bonacero. She's president of the Senior Executives Association, which represents the career SESers in the federal government. Carol, we've got sequestration happen. Some people said it wouldn't, but it did. We're in day four or five now of sequestration. Coming up, we have they must resolve what to do or not to do about the continuing resolution. That stopgap funding bill is the one that funds federal agencies when they haven't had their appropriations approved. It expires March 27th, and at some point in May, the debt ceiling limit issue comes up again, and either the continuing resolution issue this month or the debt ceiling limit in May could cause a government shutdown. How serious is this?
Well, I think the real dilemma is not only trying to figure out how to manage intelligently and effectively when you're beset and besieged by all of these fiscal cliff occasions, if you will, with seemingly no end in sight, and at the same time you're trying to keep morale up, which I think is extraordinarily difficult, and produce results. I mean, it's just, I said once that trying to manage in this situation is not for the faint of heart. And at the same time, too, you've got to be very much aware of issues that how they present in terms of, as we say, the optics. We are right now planning for that banquet honoring presidential distinguished rank executives. It's a once-in-a-lifetime evening and once-in-a-lifetime award. I've got one fellow already who's outside the Beltway who has said, I just don't see how I can attend. I would pay my own way.
Got to rent a tuxedo.
And rent a tuxedo, but that's the first week of furlough for my folks. And I just can imagine, how they would feel knowing, hey, the boss just went to Washington to a really nice dinner to be honored, and, I'm struggling to pay the electric bill.
Yeah, that may resonate all over the government. You may have a smaller banquet than usual this year.
Well, we will anyway, because as you may or may not know, the administration has been very concerned about these awards and has, sent the message loud and clear, and the agencies have heard it, to really cut back on the number that they're nominating.
Well, they've also been minimal with their publicity about these awards, too, haven't they?
They have, and I think it's a complete lost opportunity because, as you say and the things that these people have accomplished on behalf of the government, the American people, are just stunning. And I think it's a good government story that gets untold because of the worry about the fact that these awards come with a monetary stipend. But, we're also seeing at the same time how sequestration is affecting the SES pay and performance system generally. And one of the dilemmas is, for example, that, as we look at it, we think that the way that compensation system was constructed, performance awards are required by statute, and yet I know that some agencies are planning as we speak to give none this year. And you understand that in a way, given the furloughs and the sequester. On the other hand, what do you do? This is, as these folks don't have access to locality pay adjustments, cost of living adjustments, within grade increases. This is their compensation system, and so it's a tough issue.
Yeah, I can see something going viral on the YouTube of all these government executives in black tie and evening dresses dining at the State Department lounge while their colleagues are on furlough. That's a tough call. Got a telephone call here from Steve in Potomac, and he says, "How much does the role of mentoring come into play when selecting SES people? How do you find a mentor, and how political is the process?"
Well, I think finding a mentor can be tough for the reasons you and I discussed earlier, which is that these senior executives are busy 24/7. But what you can always do, I think, is ask someone for an hour of their time. You know, most of us love to give advice, and most people are executives, I find, are more than willing to meet with someone and give them an hour, whereas they might be reluctant to say, yeah, I'm in this for you with the long haul. So I think, you know, you look around your agency and find someone who, you know, seems to have it together and who you admire, and at least ask for an hour to chat with them. There has been a lot of attention over the last few years to the need for mentoring, for onboarding, for continuing professional development. At the same time that we've had that interest, which has been very welcome, you know, it's also been thwarted by the budget situation and all the crises that occur. So, it again, another tough issue.
I would think, you know, Congress, I guess last year, passed a bill that allowed for phased retirements in government. Somebody could elect to work 3 days a week, have 2 days off, continue to draw their federal pay, continue their, for those days worked, continue to draw or begin to draw their retirement annuity, and they would sort of phase out. And the emphasis Congress put on this new law was that X percentage of the time of the person who was still working would have to be devoted to mentoring. Now, OPM's been working on the instructions of how to make this thing work. It's not as easy as just passing a law. But I would think something like that would be a great help, and it would answer Steve's question.
Absolutely. And you know, the thing that we've never been terribly good at is succession planning and passing the baton. So you would hope that that time would also be devoted to passing on that institutional knowledge and paving the way for their successor. One of the things the association has been doing over the last year is indeed trying to do more mentoring, have our members do more mentoring, and we've done that with both young government leaders, with some of our own members who are GS-15s, who are SES candidates, you know, it's something that I think that our members respond to because they really do care about the next generation.
You know, you're talking about passing the baton, and I was thinking about when an administration changes hands, they bring in a couple of, well, I guess several thousand political appointees, including a 10% of the SES workforce is open for political and non-career people. And in this case, when President Obama took over from President Bush, he, as it turns out, appointed a lot of people who had worked in the Clinton administration. Many of them came back to their same agencies in government. And presumably they had a lot of experience, and in some cases, presumably they may have had some scores to settle, some people to that they wanted to deal with, and now they were back, had a chance to do it. What kind of protections, if any, do career SES people have when a new administration comes in? Because they're supposed to be mobile, and, I mean, what can a guy come in or a woman come in and say, you're moving to Topeka next weekend?
No. There are four different 120-day so-called get-acquainted periods, and they do provide an opportunity. Hopefully it's one that's taken, but it can be essentially ignored, for the political appointee to get to know the career staff before they start making decisions about moving people or assessing people. But, you know, it's easy enough to simply come in and ignore those people if you're hell-bent and determined to do that. And that is, I think, very unfortunate because we really hope that most political appointees understand that the career people are there to make them essential and to make them successful, excuse me, and are essential to their success.
How do you think the transition from Bush to Obama went?
Well, that's a good question. I think it didn't go as well as it could have. simply because I think most of the executives, you know, saw Obama and heard his message about making public service cool again and felt that there was going to be sort of a new day. And the administration, unfortunately, didn't take advantage of that by having the president do something to really connect with his career executives. And, you know, we've often talked about this, Mike, but the executives who were there for Bush 41's meeting with the SES and Constitution Hall will never forget it. And, you know, I often say they're cheap dates. You know?
Exactly.
Give them a little attention, recognize their role, give them the opportunity to work with you, and it pays enormous dividends.
An attaboy goes a long way. Carol, we have to wrap it up here, but thank you so much for taking time out on our snow blizzard day, and we'll be talking to you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks. Need to take a short break here. When I come back, we'll be talking with Stephen Losey from the Federal Times.
Tune in weekly to the Financial Safari and get that common-sense approach to financial and retirement planning.
I mean, I like to have guarantees instead of hoping and praying when we're talking about retirement. The person who has you in the risk account doesn't want you to know about it. If you try to do everything yourself, you don't have a team behind you giving you the advice, but more importantly, telling you what's wrong. Just stop doing bad things in your portfolio. It could take the worry out of living in retirement.
Tune in to the Financial Safari with Coach Pete DeRuda and local trusted advisor Michael Kinnett, Sunday mornings at 8 on 1500 AM.
You wouldn't drive your kids in the car without them wearing seatbelts, would you? So why leave them unprotected when you're gone? Learn about the latest techniques for maximizing your wealth and protecting your assets for your heirs. Join me, Wayne Zell, for Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. I'm an estate planning attorney with Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman. Each week, we talk about how you can realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. That's Blueprint for Wealth, Saturdays at 10 a.m., right here on 1500 AM.
Today is the day to make the switch, to choose to save money with Ackerman Security Systems. Why Ackerman? Because security is what they do, and they do it better than anyone else.
I was looking at ways to reduce expenses at home. With no cost to switch and only $18.95 a month for burglary, fire, and medical monitoring, I made the switch to Ackerman Security. Now I'm saving $25 a month. That's over $300 a year. On top of saving money, I feel more safe. Ackerman has one of the few monitoring centers that is both UL and CSAA 5 Diamond certified. So I know the most highly qualified operators are responding to my emergency.
Keeping your family and home safe and secure doesn't have to break the bank. Why wait? Call Ackerman today and get up to 3 months free of Ackerman's award-winning basic monitoring. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
Looking to make a career move in technology? Start your search at PowerJobs.com, the new career site made for Washington's top talent. New on PowerJobs.com this week.
Systems engineer, Purvis Systems, VP of Legal Affairs, Legal Services Corporation, Executive Director, Association of American Publishers. Apply for these and other leading positions in the influential industries that make up our region at PowerJobs.com.
PowerJobs.com, finally, a career site made for you.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
The Washington Capitals are back.
Ovechkin down low, they score! Matt Hendricks, tic-tac-toe!
Back to Green, he's at the top of the right circle. Ovechkin, he scores!
Single game tickets are on sale now. Call 202-661-5050. That's 202-661-5050. Or buy your tickets online at Ticketmaster.com.
In his recent State of the Union address, President Obama touted the importance of mapping the human brain. A team of local researchers has already started. Scientists have lots of images showing brain cells called neurons and their connections called synapses, but Randall Burns, an engineer at Johns Hopkins, says diagramming how those pieces fit together is a huge job.
This is 100 trillion neurons, each of which connects to thousands or tens of thousands other neurons.
He's taking on the first step.
Our project is storing massive amounts of data.
Because if all those brain images can be accessed from one place, it might be easier to figure out how our brains are built.
Someone will have the best technique to find synapses, and someone will have the best technique to connect different cells together.
Allowing a team approach to this massive puzzle that is our brain. More at www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Your Turn here on Blizzard Day in Washington and much of the rest of the country. A surprise March storm. The government in Washington and Baltimore is closed except for emergency personnel. A lot of the banks are closed. Schools are closed, and we're awaiting the worst of it. But I must say, for people like me who have to commute, it was a nice coming in this morning. Maybe not so good going home. But on the phone, we got Stephen Losey, senior writer with Federal Times. Steve, are you there?
I'm here. How are you, Mike?
I'm good. And your brand-new baby daughter asked me, she's keen to listen to this show, so she asked to be wakened so that she can comment during the show. So if we hear from her, we'll know that you followed your promise. Steve, we talk about these tragedies and sequestration and the fiscal cliff and the debt ceiling limit, and as it affects our beat, the civil service, you know, and the care and feeding of federal workers. But secretly, I think all of us love it because it's real, it's action, and we can keep going to the brink and commenting on it. Is it my imagination, or is there more going on now than we've seen in a long time?
I got to say yes. I mean, it feels like every time I turn around, there's something breaking, and sometimes I don't even have time to report on all the things that are happening, in a single day. There's just so many different facets of the story breaking up from different angles. So yeah, it's kind of about as crazy as I can remember it.
Well, and I call it the ghosts of the Christmas past or the ghosts of the Christmas future. Ideas like vouchers for federal workers to pay their health insurance. Ideas like making people pay more for their retirement. A variety of ways to cut federal pay or benefits. And they're out there and they keep coming back, like with the Simpson-Bowles Commission, and now apparently with the revised Simpson-Bowles Commission.
Yeah, and one of the things that was upset federal employees the most about the Simpson-Bowles proposal back in late 2010 was they were advocating for a 3-year federal pay freeze, and that looks like it's about to become a reality. You know, of course, federal employees have had their pay frozen for more than 2 years already, and President Obama issued an order last December that would grant them a half a percentage point pay raise at the end of March. Well, Republicans, unsurprisingly, are not too fond of that. They've been trying to extend the pay freeze at least through the rest of 2013 for some time now. They even passed a bill last month, a standalone bill, that would do just that. Of course, these standalone bills have no chance of going anywhere in the Senate, which is controlled by Democrats. However, the Republicans may have dealt the Democrats a checkmate on the pay freeze issue. On Monday, they unveiled a bill, their bill that would a continuing resolution bill that would fund the government for the rest of fiscal 2013, and it contains an extension of the pay freeze. Now, this may be harder for Senate Democrats to reject because, you know, they don't want a shutdown. They keep saying we don't want a government shutdown, and I went to the House yesterday for a press briefing with Steny Hoyer, who is the House Democratic Whip. He's a Maryland congressman. He is widely known as a friend of federal employees. He represents many in his district. He speaks often about the need to rewards them fairly for their work. And yesterday, Steny Hoyer said that it's likely that federal employees' pay scales are going to be frozen for the rest of the year. So it kind of sounded to me like Democrats in Congress are kind of running up the white flag.
Yeah. Well,
as far as
I'm sorry.
That goes. That's okay.
Yeah. No, I, a lot of people, there's so much of the blame is fixed on the Republicans, particularly the conservatives who control the House. But originally, the Simpson-Bowles Commission was a White House setup. And that commission, among other things, proposed the pay freeze for 3 years, and the president whittled it down to two. But it was, and correct me if I'm wrong, it was initially the president that proposed the two-year pay freeze, and also the administration endorsed the idea of having federal workers pay more for their retirement.
That is correct. The White House did come out with this two-year pay freeze, and Obama was the one who said it should be extended through the end of March. Yes, that idea did come from the White House as well. The White House has come out and said that federal employees should pay more for their pension benefits, contribute more to those, the FERS and CSRS program, as part of a way to help deal with the unfunded liabilities. Now, what the White House proposed, which I believe is about 1.2%, is much less than some of the proposals that have come out of the Republican Party, but it seems likely that when all is said and done, there is probably going to be some kind of a deal struck. I don't know when. I don't know what it's going to be a part of. Perhaps as part of a broader deficit reduction plan, maybe something that averts sequestration. But I think soon, maybe this year, there will probably be some kind of a deal that raises current federal employees. Pension contributions. Now, new federal employees who have been hired beginning this year, they've already had their pension contributions increased to about a little bit more than 3%. But I would not be surprised if we hear the revival of a plan to raise current federal employees.
Yeah, because that's your immediate money. That's your immediate savings right there. If you can bring in a million and a half, 2 million people and immediately start charging them more, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. Now, also out there, I guess, in the ether somewhere are some proposals that came from various commissions, including the Simpson-Bowles Commission, which the White House endorsed and urged Congress to endorse. They were talking
let me just jump in there.
Yeah.
The White House has kind of kept a kind of an odd distance from Simpson-Bowles.
Okay.
The Simpson-Bowles was a White House commission. But Obama said that while he supports the kind of broad principles of Simpson-Bowles, he has not endorsed Simpson-Bowles specifically.
Okay, yeah. I guess the idea behind it was like the BRAC Commission, and that is they'd recommend across-the-board changes, mostly cuts, and that everybody would take some kind of a hit, but the Congress would vote it up or down. That was the original intention, I think.
Exactly. And the White House Deficit Reduction Commission, they couldn't get – Simpson and Bowles couldn't get their commission to approve the proposal they came out with, so which meant that it wouldn't get a vote in Congress.
Now, there's a little Simpson-Bowles commission has come back with some other recommendations, or maybe some of the same, but in a smaller package?
That package mostly deals with they reduce the tax the revenue goals to be honest, I don't have it right in front of me. I can't recall exactly what it has that affects federal employees.
It seemed to me that there was some mention of vouchers. A look at vouchers, and then that chained COLA, which is very hard to understand, but people in the know say that's the one that would save the big bucks.
Yeah, that's the chained CPI, Consumer Price Index, is what that is, and it's specifically that's a change in how inflation is calculated, In a nutshell,
Steve, let me ask you about that. We need to take a short break, but
okay.
Hold that thought, and we'll get back to the chain CPI right here on Federal News Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you about a miracle powder. It gets your whites whiter. It gets your colours brighter. It even makes your appliances last longer. And that's money in your pocket. But that's not all. This product also improves how your food tastes. And best of all, it's all natural and has exactly zero calories. Now, how much would you pay for such an amazing product? Don't answer yet, because this brilliant powder actually saves lives by preventing 88% of all winter driving accidents. Oh, it really takes the biscuit. In fact, it's so cracking. You'll find it in every modern hospital in the world and in your own body. Now, how much would you pay?
This amazing product, salt. Guess it's true what they say. Everything's better with a little salt. To learn more, visit alittlesalt.org.
What you don't know about federal pay, benefits, and retirement can cost you. Get the answers you need with a free publication from NARF, the experts on federal retirement and benefits. Download FAQs about your federal benefits today at fedfaqs.org. NARF, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association, unravels the most complex rules and requirements feds encounter. Download your free guide today at fedfaqs.org. That's FEDFAQS.org.
The Washington Wizards are back.
Spins, fades, bangs, scores, and one. Okafor. Up court to Crawford. No look pass. Ariza. Stump to it.
Crawford drives baseline. Whips it in the corner. Sheldon Mack for three.
Single game tickets are on sale now. Call 202-661-5050. That's 202-661-5050. Or buy your tickets online at WashingtonWizards.com/tickets.
Enjoy the comedy of Emmy Award-winning Dana Carvey and dance the night away to the sounds of Jim Belushi and the Sacred Hearts at the 26th Annual Leukemia Ball. It's presented by Bio in partnership with Genentech, Saturday, March 23rd. Take part in a fabulous auction and a chance to win one of two Mercedes-Benz. D.C.'s largest non-political fundraiser supports the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's critical research and patient services programs. For sponsorship opportunities or to purchase raffle tickets, visit leukemiaball.org.
What is national health security and how do we get there as a country? How are we strengthening public health and medical preparedness, response, and recovery capabilities? And what is being done to ensure the availability of safe and effective medical countermeasures in the event of a public health emergency? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and more with Dr. Nicole Laurie, Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response with the U.S. Health and Human Services, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
This is Aileen Black, Vice President of VMware Federal. With all the talk about cloud computing in the federal community, one has got to wonder, whose cloud are we really talking about? Cloud computing is changing the way IT resources are delivered, managed, and consumed. No small deal. As agencies seek agility, cost savings, security, and flexibility, the last thing you need is to get locked into a one-size-fits-all model that forces dependence on something you can't control. More federal IT infrastructure is virtualized on VMware than any other platform, because virtualization is the foundation for cloud computing. Our solutions aren't just complete, they're completely flexible, so you can build the most important cloud in the world, your cloud.
The Federal News Radio CXO Survey 2013 Priorities, underwritten by VMware and Carahsoft, provides insight into CIO's top priorities in 2013. Cloud, mobile, big data, and the changing landscape of budgets. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword survey, to see the results.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
We'll be right back. Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. I'm talking with Steve Losey. He's a senior writer with the Federal Times, and we were talking about, as newsmen, how delightful these times are with all of this bad news looming for the people that we cover. But it is, it's got to be a nerve-wracking time to be a federal worker. Steve, we were talking about the chain CPI. I miscalled it the chain COLA. I keep doing that. But the idea behind it is that they would literally change the yardstick that they use to determine inflation. It would produce, if this chained CPI came into being, it would produce a smaller raise. It would reduce the amount of the inflation, and not the actual inflation, but the amount that people would be getting, and that over the years, the raises people get would be, it would be like what am I trying to think of here? It would be like compounding in reverse.
Yeah, I don't think it would really so much affect active federal employees' pay raises, but it would most definitely lower the cost of living adjustments for
retirees. Exactly, yeah. Those are the ones that would be hit. And it's the kind of thing somebody compared it to putting a lobster in cold water and then turning up the heat. You would be, by the time you were boiled, it would be too late. You wouldn't understand it until it was too late.
Exactly. And now, I mean, the chain consumer price index sounds like kind of a complicated, very technical issue, and it is. But there's a way I like to describe it that I think makes sense. Basically, the way the government sets the inflationary rates now, critics say it doesn't take into account the way consumers change their buying habits as prices increase. Take fruit, okay? Mm-hmm. Say you like to go to the store every week and you buy a bunch of Granny Smith apples. And what if Granny Smith apples become more expensive? And you might buy fewer Granny Smiths. You might say, oh, well, these Golden Delicious apples are, 50 cents cheaper. I'm going to get those instead. So you change your buying habits, and the chain consumer price index takes those changes into account. As a result, the chain CPI is usually about a quarter of a percentage point to 3/10 of a percentage point lower each year on average than the standard CPI measurements, which is used to determine COLAs.
So over,
now,
yeah,
over, yes, and over time it compounds.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's it's like going from fillet to ground beef to hamburger to hamburger
horse
helper.
Meat.
Yeah, like horse meat. Yeah, only in Europe, we hope. The other thing that, is the voucher idea that comes and goes, and I think it was endorsed initially by the Simpson-Bowles Commission, but several groups out there had it. And the idea behind vouchers is, and correct me if I'm wrong, is they give you a fixed amount of money each year, they being the government. The employee and retiree would take that and buy his or her insurance with that.
Yeah, that's right. It is essentially a voucher system where they give you a set amount and say you can use this to buy health insurance off the HBP plan. It would increase by a certain amount. I believe it's the GDP plus one percentage point, I believe. But critics of the that kind of a voucher system say the GDP plus one doesn't come close to matching the increase in inflationary rates of healthcare premiums, which can sometimes be, 7-8%. We've seen some pretty sizable premium increases in the last decade or so. So over time, the federal employees would shoulder more and more of the weight of those kinds of FEHPP premium increases. And that's why federal unions and federal employee groups are strongly, strongly opposed to that kind of a premium support system.
It's funny. Each side makes a good argument. If you hear it, you agree with it, and then you go away and hear the other side. But the opponents say, as you said, that it would drive people into less expensive plans where the premiums were lower, but their coverage wouldn't be as good. They would be self-policing themselves, and the backers of a voucher say that it would give people adequate amount of money, but it would get them out of the Cadillac plans, and it would make them think more carefully when they were shopping for insurance. So they both make pretty good arguments.
Yeah, and they're kind of both sort of arguing, making the same points, that it would cause people to buy cheaper plans, but for proponents of that, that's a feature, not a bug. You know, they're hoping that people might be a bit more frugal in the kind of health care plans they choose. Now, we have seen that, even though there is the premium support system is not in effect now, and it's, you know, not close to, as far as I know, it's not on the in the cards right now, but we have seen people do just that. People have been moving to the more basic versions of your Blue Cross and your GEHA healthcare plans over the last couple of years as people have become more frugal. And a lot of people have realized, you know, these basic plans still provide, they save you a good bit of money, and they still provide very good healthcare coverage.
Well, Walton Francis, the guy who does the Consumer's Guide, a checkbook guide to federal health plans, said numerous times on this show during the open season that the Blue Cross basic was in many ways, although it's much less expensive, in many ways it was as good as the standard plan, and in some ways it was superior to it.
Yeah. I've spoken to Walt many times myself. He's a smart guy, and he knows what he's talking about.
Okay. What else are you guys working on?
Well, the sequester.
Yeah.
You know, of course, the big fight to – a big push to avert sequestration just went out with a whimper, not a bang, last week. Congress adjourned Thursday evening, and a lot of lawmakers skipped town. It was not Washington's finest hour. And Friday evening, President Obama issued the order ordering agencies to start implementing $85 billion in cuts. And we were starting to see the actual effects. There have been tens of thousands of employees in the DOD who have already their unions have already been notified that they're going to be furloughed. The Army has their Research, Development, and Engineering Command, which is headquartered at Aberdeen Proving Ground in Maryland, but there are about 15,000 or so of those employees around the nation. And they were told that they were going to furloughs, one-day-a-week furloughs, were going to start in late April and go for the rest of the fiscal year. They say that those furloughs would be either on Mondays or Fridays. Now, it's not a guarantee that other commands, even within DOD, are going to do the same thing, but that kind of provides a peek into, you know, what some of the how the practical effects of these furloughs might take shape.
Well, and it's possible that sequestration, we may look back on this as the good old days, because sequestration is moving very slowly. They can't furlough people until they've given them at least a 30-day notice. There's the appeal process for people who are in unions or in union bargaining units. So you're talking about mid-April at the earliest before the furloughs will start. On the other hand, if they have a problem with the continuing resolution, which expires March 27th, or the debt ceiling limit, which is sometime in May, that could literally shut the government down overnight, couldn't it?
Yeah, although the House proposing their continuing resolution bill and the Democrats appearing to start to yield on the pay freeze says to me that I think they're going to come to some deal that averts a government shutdown as far as the spending bill. Now, of course, the debt ceiling, yeah, that is definitely on the horizon, and who knows what's going to happen with that.
We'll leave it at that. Thank you very much, Steve Losey. Talk to you next week. Thank you, everybody. Be careful out there. It's treacherous. Have a good day.